May it please the court.
Certainly.
Amanda Basil was convicted of two counts of stealing firearms acquired at the same time in the same burglary. The question before this court is whether those two convictions constitute double jeopardy. And we first look at the legislative intent for a unit of prosecution deciding that question.
Can you first address the standard of review and the fact that was not objected to?
Yes, this is a plain error question. And it's funny, so many of these cases are. But double jeopardy has been held to be plain error because it goes to the very power of the state to convict a person. It's a manifest injustice to convict someone of two felony convictions where only one will lie under the statute. So I believe we've met that plain error standard in this case. It was not objected to. It was raised for the first time on appeal, Your Honor. Section 570.030 lists the items which elevate a stealing to a Class C felony. Under subsection 3, those items are property that the property that is appropriated consists of certain items, and sub D, any firearms is one of those items. And I think it's significant that firearms is plural. Some of the subsections list motor vehicle is not. All of them, however, use the word any, or most of them do. And in the Liberty case, this court held that the statute did not unambiguously permit separate prosecutions in a case of child pornography because of the word any. And this court said, you know, there might be an exception if those items of child pornography were acquired at different times. And in fact, in Roggenbuck later that year, that case did come before this court, and the court said, well, there were different times and different sources, so multiple charges were supported. In this case, we know that the firearms were acquired at the same time and from the same source. They were charged as being acquired in the first of two burglaries. So I think that this case comes down to the word any, which is ambiguous and implies the plural. But it also is even more clear because of the word firearms, which has an S at the end of it. And so we've talked a lot, the state and I, in our briefs about the rule of lenity, but I don't even think that this court has to get there. I think if you only use the rule of lenity if you have to guess as to legislative intent. And I think here the legislative intent is clear. The unit of prosecution for stealing firearms is any firearms. And that makes one Class C felony of stealing.
And the Ross court came out the other direction, right?
I think that's why we're here, Your Honor. But the Ross court came out the opposite of the Western District's opinion in Basel. And Ross relied on the Heslop case out of this court, which negated the single larceny rule of Cody. And Cody, the single larceny rule was a per se rule, like the single act of force rule in McTush. And those had been the rule in Missouri until Missouri v. Hunter out of the U.S. Supreme Court, which said, no, you're not looking at the right thing. You have to look at legislative intent when you look at a double jeopardy question. So after that, this court said, okay, single larceny rule is gone in Heslop, single act of force rule is gone in McTush, and from now on we look at legislative intent. But Heslop didn't address this question, so I think the Southern District in Ross was incorrect to rely on it. Heslop was simply looking at that single larceny rule of Cody and never looked at the statute itself to look at that language and see that the word any would control, and I think that's what this court then took up in Liberty. Heslop also talked about the 570.050, which talks about whether you can aggregate amounts stolen. So I don't think that Heslop really adds much to this inquiry, which is why I think the Southern District should not have relied on it. I don't think Heslop helps the analysis, and I don't think 570.050 helps at all, because it talks about amounts rather than items. Now, the Western District.
What about sub 6, which does talk about amounts, but says the theft of any item of property pursuant to subsection 3, in which the any firearms language is included, which exceeds $500, may be considered a separate felony and may be charged in separate counts.
The Western District, in its Basel opinion, said that that was the reason that, the Southern District was wrong in Ross, because sub 6 did not exist at the time Heslop was handed down, and so this court didn't have the benefit of that subsection, and that had changed the analysis. While I like that,
and
I'm not sure it helps either.
Why does it not say that if it's over $500, it can be a separate felony for each item, which does not imply that if it's under $500, you accumulate them?
I think it does, but I think because we don't have anything that goes to amounts or value in this thing, I don't think that that still changes the analysis for the enumerated items under sub 3 of the stealing code. I know the Western District thought that made a difference. And I would like to say I agree with them because it helps me. But I still think what this court really needs to look at is the plain language of those enumerated items under sub 3. Sub 6 is still talking about items of property that have a certain value and whether those can be considered separate felonies. So I think it clearly had the state in this case presented evidence and charged that Ms. Basel stole two firearms, each of which had a value of over $500, she could have been convicted of those two separate felonies, each with a value of over $500.
But because there was no evidence of the value of the guns, what do we read into that?
Well, then she was charged under sub 3D, which says any firearms, and that unit of prosecution becomes a plural. There are other.
I believe the Western District's point would be that sub 6 would add nothing if you could always consider everything in sub 3 as separate items. Therefore, that they set out a subset of those based on amount, which isn't relevant here. But the fact that they said above a certain amount you can consider them separate implies that otherwise you could not. And that's what you're arguing here is you can't consider them separately.
Right. You can't consider them separately. Because I think you have to. Before you start looking at legislative intent, you have to look at plain language. And I think the plain language here, because of the S on the end of firearms, controls. Thank you.
May it please the court. Before we even get to the interpretation of the statute and the enhancement itself, we need to figure out if this is even a double jeopardy situation. The state does not believe that this actually raises a double jeopardy claim because we believe that the unit of prosecution for the crime of stealing, and the crime of stealing is defined not by subsection 570.0303, it's defined by 570.0301. And what it says is that the appropriation of any property without the consent of the owner, with the purpose to permanently deprive thereof, is the crime of stealing. Double jeopardy doesn't concern ourselves with how much the second punishment is. It doesn't concern ourselves with sentencing enhancements. And subsection 3 does not define a new crime, separate crime of stealing. What it does is it provides for sentencing enhancements for the general crime of stealing. So what are we doing with subsection 3? Not whether it's two separate crimes, but whether you can have two misdemeanor punishments or two felony punishments.
So what if I took five $10 bills out of your wallet? Is that five separate felonies that you can submit?
To be honest, I don't know how
to
qualify under how you if bills are, if individual bills are actually considered separate items of property.
Why would it be different under your
But if it is, I think the answer could be yes. Now, why doesn't that happen often? Because of the desire to aggregate things for value. But I think if you steal two items, if you steal be it two candy bars or $2 bills or whatever it is, yes, the state can charge that as multiple stealings because each item of property is a separate crime. And first of all, that is what this court said in Heslop. Heslop is not inapplicable because it was dealing with a different question. It's directly applicable to the idea is if you steal two different items from the same victim at the same time, Is that one felony or is that two felonies? And in that situation, it was motor vehicles. And they said the stealing of a motor vehicle can be a felony. And if you take two of them, that can be two different crimes and two different felonies. That's what the court was doing by the single larceny rule. And so under Heslop, that would mean that each individual item of property constitutes the unit of prosecution
for
stealing.
So if you steal the car, you could separately charge everything in the car. You could charge the battery. You could charge the steering wheel. You could charge, where's the limit to what you're saying?
I think the battery and the steering wheel are actually part of the car, but
they chose to charge the car, but you're saying each act, you'd look at each item, they could instead charge 50 things you stole from that same act. It would be the state's choice, you're saying.
Yes, I think that, and I think the more germane question is, if I steal a car and inside the car is a laptop computer and a musical instrument and a purse containing cash, can I charge those separately? And I believe the answer is yes, because those are each discernible individual items of things. I think that's a little more germane question than the individual interconnected parts of the car itself.
Counsel, you say the offense is stealing under subsection 1.
Yes.
I think you're right. Why does subsection 3 apply at all?
It applies at all because the claim appellant really should have raised if they want to challenge is does subsection 3 permit felony enhancements for two different convictions, not whether there can be two different convictions at all.
But why would it even allow for felony enhancements? It seems to be limited to offenses in which the value of property or services is an element. Is the value of property or services an element of stealing as defined in subsection 1?
There has been case law that has tried to explore what that language means, and essentially, the state's belief is that case law is kind of settled out, is that's just another way of stating the crime of stealing, that all items have a value. The question on value is, what is the amount of value?
Well, it has no meaning.
We know what an element is.
Right.
Is the jury charged with finding value in a stealing case?
They are not specifically charged with finding the value in every stealing case. In some cases...
Well, then why is stealing a crime for which value of the services or property stolen is an element?
Because everything possesses something inherently of value. If you steal, I can't even imagine what you
so
could
that
steal
makes it
that
not
possesses.
An element rather than an element.
No, but I think it's an inherent element of every stealing crime. What I think the legislature was doing there is trying to explain that any item of property is a property of value. I'm trying to come up with a situation where you steal something that isn't value, because you still have to identify when you steal something. Still have to identify the object that it is, and that the object that it is would have value.
You can define property or services as something with value, but that's property and services. That doesn't make value an element. Stealing property is an element, and the definition of property is something with greater than zero value, but value doesn't by that become an element. That's if it does, I'm confused as to how and where that's ever articulated. It's not in the jury instructions, it's not ever a separate argument for sufficiency. The sufficiency argument would be it wasn't property because it had no value. Not that the state failed to prove value as an element. They failed to prove property.
Right. I've grasped the question. And the problem is that this language has been really difficult to ask. And I will say this, and this is just the fault of my memory. In the Ross case, this was actually a separate point that was raised, and it was rejected by the Ross court. And I don't remember, to be honest, the explanation for that. I think also tellingly,
are there some stealing statutes that do make a separately listed element in the statute the value of the property over $200, property over $500?
That's what subsection 3.
Other statutes, to your knowledge, beyond not right now. Okay.
I'm trying to think of one. I can't think of any other crime in which punishes stealing, other than 570. It seems like everything that you can steal is kind of grouped there. Even things that involve like anhydrous ammonia, which could be punished under the 195 statutes, is contained in 570.
And was that always the case?
Prior to the code, I don't recall. Since the code, I'm not familiar with any statute in the code that punished stealing. I mean, we have crimes that punish robbery, but that doesn't require proof of an amount of value. Receiving stolen property isn't stealing, it's receiving stolen property. So, no, I'm not familiar with any other statute that provides that. As I said, as to the question of exactly what that language means, it doesn't say nothing to say that that's just another way of saying stealing. That gives that, because it...
If you took that language out, it would have absolutely no effect on the statute, though, under interpretation.
That is true.
So that's what we call not mean anything.
And I will say, in the 2017 statute, they have taken that language out.
And what does it say now?
What does it say for the current statute? It raises a suggestion that the language is indeed unnecessary, and I realize that we have to interpret statute as if it says something. But essentially to say that if stealing itself doesn't include inherently an element of value, and that property contains an inherent value, then essentially the entirety of subsection 3 would mean nothing, and we can't intend that the legislature meant nothing by passing
the rest of
subsection.
So what would be the effect of that if subsection 3 didn't apply here? Would that make it a misdemeanor?
If there was no subsection 3, there's no felony stealing at all.
And then what's the effect of subsection 6?
The effect of subsection 6, and again, we don't believe this is a double jeopardy issue, but this would be a straight statutory interpretation issue. We believe that that appellant's interpretation of subsection 6 is also creates an ambiguity. We think the real purpose of subsection 6 can be seen in the history of the statute. What happened is that in the Eastern District ruled on a case called State versus Snyder, and that case addressed what 570.050 meant. And what that statute is, the aggregation statute. You can aggregate the amounts of value to get to the felony threshold over things stolen over the course of the same course of conduct. And the Eastern District said, if you do that, if you aggregate, then that's all you get. You aggregate everything, and then that's one felony stealing. And you can't, if somebody stole $1,000 worth of stuff, or we would need more than that, $1,500 worth of stuff, and one of those things was worth $600. What the Eastern District said is, if you want to aggregate all that stuff, then that's one felony and one felony only. You can't separate out the thing that was worth more than $500. And what we believe this statute was trying to do was to address that and say, no, if there is an item of property in the aggregated value, which is subsection 1 of sub 1 of sub 3, the aggregate value, you can separate that out and charge that as a separate crime. We think you can see that in the plain language, in the language that's used in subsection 6, which is essentially identical to the language used in subsection 3, subsection 1, and that's any item of property or services with a value of more than $500. We think that it was trying to address just that one. And there's other reasons to support that interpretation. First of all, again, we believe that the item of the unit of prosecution for stealing is each individual item, just under stealing by itself. So when you're evaluating the property stolen to see if it's a felony item or a misdemeanor, you take one piece of property at a time and say, is this something that can be punished as a felony, or is this something that can be punished as a misdemeanor? And I think that appellant's argument gets absurd because subsection 6 doesn't actually delineate between any of the kinds of property in subsections 3. So let's imagine somebody stole $800 in cash, a credit card, a gun, a United States flag, and a chicken, which is an animal kept as livestock. Appellant's argument means that stealing all five of those different items could only be one felony because all of those things are property as set out in subsection 3. And we believe that's not the intent of the legislature, because the intent of the legislature intended the stealing of a gun to be a crime. $800, which is more than $500, to be a felony, a credit card to be a felony, a United States flag to be a felony, and a chicken to be a felony. So essentially saying, if you steal different things out of subsection 3, then subsection 6 wouldn't apply. But if you steal more than one of the same thing, then it would apply. There's nothing in the language of subsection 6 that suggests that. In order to resolve subsection 6, to make it make the most sense and make it appear to be something the legislature would have intended, it should be interpreted to say what they were addressing were those things in subsection 3 that dealt with amount of value, because that's what subsection 6 is dealing with, amount of value.
Well, because there was no amount of value entered into evidence here, what's the applicability of section 6?
It should not apply at all to this case. It doesn't resolve the ambiguity in the any firearm statute, and thus doesn't apply. We believe that it only applies to subsection 3, subsection 1.
And why, again, do you need it? Why couldn't you just separately charge it without regard to subsection 6? Why does the state need subsection 6
We don't need or want subsection 6 applied
in this
case.
No, in some other case.
For subsection 1, if you have an aggregate value greater than $500, let's say, again, my circumstance was, if I had $1,500 worth of stuff.
I understand what it does, I'm saying, but under your interpretation, why is it even needed? Couldn't you make your choice anyway if subsection 6 didn't exist? If it didn't authorize you to separate out separate items that are worth over $500, would you be prohibited from doing so?
Under the Eastern District's opinion in Snyder, yes was the answer, as the courts were interpreting it. And so what that does is remedies that you can aggregate some. So I have something worth $100, something worth $200, something worth $200. I can aggregate those three to get one felony, and then there's also something worth $600. I can take that one by itself and have it be a separate felony. Without subsection 6, the courts were interpreting 0.050 to say you can only aggregate or you can only charge each separately, but you can't do both. That's what subsection 6 does.
The example you just gave, the thing worth $200 and $100, those three things could not be any of those enumerated, or you could charge those as separate felonies.
Right. Those things can be charged by separate felony regardless
of
value.
So it's only something excluded off of these that you would aggregate
That you would aggregate and then also separate from the aggregation. That's what subsection 6 was meant to do, and that makes the most legislative intent, because really, when it comes down to us, did the legislature intend for the stealing of one gun to be punished to the same extent as the stealing of 10 guns or of 50 guns or 100 guns? We believe that that's an illogical result.
What they said, though. We don't decide how we might have enacted it or might not enact it.
Unless what they said was ambiguous, and we do believe that any firearms is ambiguous, and we do believe that the application of 0.060 is ambiguous because it leads to a bizarre result. So there, we do have to look at what they meant, because the plain language of the statute of just what they said doesn't answer the question.
And you kind of seem to argue the opposite of the rule of lenity. You seem to be saying, when in doubt, we should assume they probably wanted to punish criminals more rather than less, and that's not what we do, though.
Well, I believe that we say
that is explicitly what you argue. They must have wanted the higher punishment if we don't know what they wanted.
Well, we believe that lenity is an absolute default rule. If you cannot discern the legislative intent in any other manner, you then have to default to the rule of lenity.
How do you discern their intent that they want to punish one versus 10 firearms, they want to punish 10 more harshly?
Right. One, we believe that's an illogical or absurd result, and you
but
need
there's
to
nothing
it.
In the language of the statute that gets you to that
okay.
conclusion.
And then the other, of the language,
that
of this, right, of this specific statute.
Right. That's my question. There's nothing you're relying on in the language of the statute to show us that they want to punish 10 more harshly than one, other than you think it's illogical.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing specifically in the text of the statute itself which is ambiguous and thus needs to be remedied.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, this is improper enhancement as opposed to, which seems to be their argument. It's not double jeopardy. This is, at most what you're arguing, this was improperly enhanced.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think you've got stealing in sub 1 defined. But then you have to look at the whole statute for a double jeopardy question to see what the unit of prosecution was set out by the legislature. And in this case, the unit of prosecution for firearms is plural. And that is clear under the statute. That's clear under sub 3. So you can't divorce sub 3 from sub 1. You can't say, well, for purposes of double jeopardy analysis, we say, well, it's all a stealing. You could steal several credit cards and several fish. Fish is another one, I think, is plural, although grammar comes into play there. But you've got two convictions here. You've got two felony convictions for stealing two firearms, and you have to look at the whole statute.
If they had only been sentenced as misdemeanors, what would your argument be?
I would still be raising double jeopardy because I think the unit of prosecution here is singular.
But you're getting that from C, and C is not relevant if they didn't try to enhance it, I think is the argument. So what would you be basing your unit of prosecution on? If we didn't go to 3 to try to enhance it, if they were just convicted of stealing, so you were just under sub 1.
And no value was charged?
No value was charged.
No value was charged, right.
In other words, if we applied C the way it's written and applied it only to crimes for which value is an element, that would,
right, and nobody's so far interpreted it that way, although I think you're right, and that was raised in Ross.
Is there such a thing as bearing arm? I mean, the right to bear arm versus bear arms? Does it always have to be in the plural, the right to bear arms versus one arm?
You know, I think the word any still makes this plural, but the legislature certainly changed firearms from motor vehicles the way they listed these out. I don't think that addresses Judge Wilson's question.
But there's such a thing as a firearm versus a firearms?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
I think so.
Thank you.
I think so.
But it's the right to bear firearms, so not the bear firearm.
Can you address the issue of enhancement? Should this court disagree that it was a double jeopardy issue and believe it was a sentencing enhancement issue? Do you have an argument that it was an improper enhancement?
Well, no, because I hadn't thought through that. Okay. I think that you'd still only be able to be convicted of one firearms offense, one stealing one firearm, that the unit of prosecution under the statute.
Why do you even get to 3 if they charged it as misdemeanors? That's what I don't understand. What if they just charged it as 2 misdemeanors? And assume it was guns. If they didn't charge it as a felony, why does 3 even apply?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, but that's not what we've got here. We've got two felony convictions, and you know, I think the legislature has set out items that are not easily subject to value. I mean, you've got credit cards and wills and things that are listed in there. Some of these items could be proved as value. The livestock case out of the Southern District, you could easily prove those cattle were worth over $500.
If we take the argument of, or the statements of Judge Wilson and Judge Fisher, that 3 is only for enhancement, then the example given and the questions by Judge Stiff, if 5 $10 bills are taken, there could be 5 misdemeanors.
I'm not going to go that far.
No,
I think that is an absurd result.
The extrapolation of if you charge these as misdemeanors, there were 2 guns taken, there's 2 misdemeanors, so
then do you have 050 make it one course of conduct? Does 050 come in and say amount stolen pursuant to one scheme of conduct?
Sure, or 564-0011 would make it one course of conduct for that matter. You know, we haven't even talked about 564-0011.
And what does 564 say?
That's the more general course of conduct statute that talks about when something is a single course of conduct. It can't be split into multiple offenses. So, you know, I think we'd have that come into play as well. I didn't raise that under that particular statute in this case.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Case will be submitted.